Secrets of a Serial Killer.
I didn't ever want freedom. Frankly, I wanted death for myself. This was a case to tell the world that I did what I did not for reasons of hate. I hated no one. I knew I was sick or evil or both. Now I believe I was sick. I should have stayed with God. I tried and failed and created a Holocaust. And if I could give my life right now to bring their loved ones back, I would do it. I am so very sorry. I deserve whatever I get because of what I have done.
What you heard right then and there was a little bit of Dahmer's statement that he gave to the court right after his final sentencing. So today we're going to be talking about the story of the Milwaukee cannibal, Jeffrey Dahmer. So Jeffrey Lionel Dahmer was born in Milwaukee, May of 1960. Despite the difficulties of Joyce's pregnancy, Jeff still had a normal life. He supposedly didn't have any childhood trauma, but I disagree. His mother put all his milestones in a scrapbook. His mother did suffer from depression and anxiety, and raising a kid made it so much harder for her. Her and her husband Lionel argued a lot. He was a chemist that was working towards his PhD. Lionel spent a big portion of his life at the lab so he could avoid his wife. So Jeff was left with his mother, and she'd be so depressed that she couldn't even get out of bed. They moved from Milwaukee to Ames, Iowa, to Doylestown, Ohio, then to Bath Township, Ohio, all within the span of 8 years. It didn't help Jeff none that his first grade teacher said that he was so withdrawn and seemed very unhappy. He didn't engage with the other kids, and during recess, he would just walk around the playground by himself. Lionel noticed that Jeff would sit there motionless for long periods of time, and he would speak without making any facial expressions. He didn't like playing games with other kids or people, unless if it was hide-and-seek. Lionel thought Jeff was just shy and that he would eventually outgrow it. This might be early signs of developmental or personality disorders. Jeff's father tried to get him to play tennis and join the Boy Scouts, but he always dismissed or abandoned these hobbies. He was more interested in dissecting animals. Due to his father being a chemist, he didn't see anything wrong with that. He took it as a sign that his son was into science. During dinner one night, 10-year-old Jeff asked his father, "What would happen if they put chicken bones into bleach?" Due to the lack of communication and connection with his son, he took the opportunity to bond with him. So after dinner, he showed him how it was done. His mom would always be asleep when he had come home, and when she was awake, she was always fighting with her husband Lionel. It got so bad, in 1970, she was committed to a psychiatric hospital. Jeff said it made him unsure for the solidity of his family. He said, and I quote, "I decided early on that I would never be getting married because I never wanted to go through anything like that." I quote. He blamed himself for her problems because she's been depressed ever since he was born. He thinks that his birth is what caused her to be stressed. Nah, I think it's deeper than that, buddy. Instead of talking to his family about the situation, he just retreated and just kept it all to himself. He played a game called Infinity Land. And if you want to see the game, just watch the TV show on Netflix. He plays it with Tony. So in 1974, he wore army stuff to school and pretty much stayed to himself unless, you know, he was being a class clown. He was having like nosebleeds or these epileptic fake seizures, and they referred it to as doing a Dahmer. But to me, doing the Dahmer looks like he's making fun of autistic people, if you want me to be open and honest. He started drinking at the age of 14, downing a pint of liquor a day. He actually had alcohol in his locker. He would pour it in a cup and then take it to class. And when his classmates asked him what he was drinking, he would simply say, his medicine. He realized that he was gay. As Dahmer said, it was supposed to be hush-hush, not talked about or even thought about. He started collecting roadkill and taking it to the shed behind the house. He cut them open and separate the bones from the flesh. He was driven by curiosity, not cruelty, because he never hurt or killed any animals like most serial killers. "I just wanted to see what the insides looked like," Dahmer said. He would have been one hell of a taxidermist, but then he started thinking about what it'd be like to cut open a person. He would think about cutting open a dead person or sleeping with a living person. I think Jeff would have been either one good taxidermist or one hell of a medical examiner or mortician, since those are the only two things he really like cares about, honestly. But the wires in his brain got crossed and he developed necrophilia. It was to control unresisting and uncontrollable human. Since he was so withdrawn from everybody and didn't want to communicate or interact, he did have fantasies of having a partner that did not resist. When he was 16 in 1976, there was this jogger that ran past his house every single day. He didn't have fantasies of killing or mutilating him, just to knock him out and cuddle with him. He was thinking, hit the man over the head, drag him into the woods, lay next to him till he wakes up. You know, the damage is a little bit minimal, but, you know, Dahmer didn't do it anyways, though. Every time he planned on doing it, he chickened out. When Dahmer finally worked up the courage to do it, he hid behind some bushes with a baseball bat, but the boy never came. He took a rest day, and Jeff was so thrown off that he decided to go home. So in 1978, his parents got divorced. Lionel moved out of the house while the lawyers fought over who was going to keep the house. Dahmer was 18, but his parents fought viciously over his younger brother David, who was 12. He would go outside while his parents would argue, and he'd hit sticks against trees until they broke. Even disconnected at school, he would be so drunk, but the teachers didn't care. But he still had a little bit of a prank side to him. On a class trip to Washington, D.C., he even prank called the vice president at the time, Walter Mantle, and got a private tour of the White House for him and his friends. He even went to prom, but he ditched his date and came back an hour later drunk, saying he went to McDonald's to get a cheeseburger. McDonald's and ABC store, my friend, are two different places. During the senior year, his classmates describe him as hollow and even more disconnected. When he wasn't around, they would gossip about him and how he would eventually snap. He'd either kill himself or kill someone else. Loneliness is a significant trigger for violent behavior, but not always. Dahmer was showing all the signs. If handled properly, it could have been taken care of, and, you know, the violent side of him, you know, probably wouldn't have existed, but his teachers and his parents failed him. So in spring of 1978, Mr. Ceresco was walking out to his car after school and noticed that Jeff was sitting there on the grass going through a 12-pack of beer, and he already downed like three of them. He did not look like he was having a good time. So Mr. Ceresco told him, a little bit late, 4 years late to be exact, that he shouldn't be drinking or bringing alcohol to school. Congratulations, dude, you idiot. He said that he had to report it to the guidance counselor, and Jeff said that he was having a lot of problems. Well, he already told the guidance counselor anyways, and Mr. Ceresco thought Jeff was having problems due to his parents' divorce, so he decided to leave him alone. A few teachers have seen him drink alcohol in the middle of class, which is not only dangerous, but is illegal since he wasn't 21. Even the librarian was concerned about his lack of social cohesion. Nothing was done. If the guidance counselor would have stepped in, it probably could have helped him from being a danger to himself or others. Yes, guidance counselors are not psychologists or licensed psychiatrists, but they can use coping mechanisms to help the students. But in 1970s, mental health wasn't really connected to violence, and people really didn't understand back then. One of his classmates called the town, the movie, Stepford Wives. It was very common for drug use and suicide in the town. They handled smoking cigarettes and marijuana in school by making a designated smoking area for the students. One of his classmates said he wasn't expecting him to snap, but he was an oddball from the get-go and withdrawn, and he also made us laugh. It didn't surprise me that he became a serial killer, but he wasn't my first choice from our class. When I heard one of my classmates was accused of being a serial killer, Dahmer was my second guess. We can only hope that the first person on his list actually got help that Dahmer never did. Most of the time, students like Dahmer fall through the cracks. As long as they're not causing any trouble or bringing attention to themselves, teacher will turn a blind eye to their behavior problems. Facts. I know that for personal experience. But in this case, it was a fucking free-for-all in this school. When the school year ended in 1978, Jeff did graduate. Barely. When his parents were finalizing their divorce, his mom took his younger brother David to Wisconsin, leaving Jeff at the house all by himself. Lionel was living in a motel 10 miles away. Due to the abandonment at this point is where he didn't want people to leave him. He hated sleeping alone. He started having fantasies of that jogger. The more time passed, the more the urge got stronger. Jeff tried pushing the violent thoughts away by drinking. The more he drank, the more he fell into his daydreaming world. He had a fantasy of picking up a gay hitchhiker, bringing them back to the house with him, and just loving him, and that's it. As he was driving home from going to see a movie, he spotted a hitchhiker. Dreams do come true. 18-year-old Stephen Hicks was headed to Chickawa Lake, Idaho, for a rock concert. I don't know how to pronounce it. It was 30 miles west from his home. By 5 p.m., he made it to Bath Township, and he was walking. Hey, buddy, you wouldn't see me fucking walking. Hell no, which was 16 miles north, not west. So the dude went the wrong direction anyways. Trying to find a ride in the right direction was proving difficult. He stuck his thumb out, and Dahmer told him to hop in. They went back to his place to drink some beers before they headed out to the concert. They grabbed some beers, and they hit up the Jeff's room, and they both graduated that year. So they started talking about everything in school and life and so on and so forth. Well, Steven liked rock music, and he was on his way to meet his girlfriend. Dahmer immediately felt his hopes die. His fantasies of a hitchhiker that lived in a town over his age, good-looking, all came crashing down. Alone together, they got along, and Steven had his girlfriend, though. Damn. And Jeff would be alone forever. After a couple hours, the sky was getting dark, and Steven was ready to go. He said they better get back on the road, and that's when Jeff snapped. He grabbed the barbell and hit Steven in the back of the head. Steven was still conscious and he was fighting back, so he hit him in the head again, and then he pressed the barbell right on his throat. He didn't plan on killing Steven, but something just came over him. Even if he didn't mean to kill him, it does seem like the fantasies he was dreaming about. Once he stopped panicking, he laid down next to Steven's dead body and rubbed his hand right over his chest. Then he stood up and masturbated on the corpse. When it was dark, he drugged the body into the crawl space under the house. Dahmer later said, "I was out of my mind. That night, my body riddled with panic. I've gone to the extreme." In the morning, he went back out to the crawl space, hunched over Steven's body, and started cutting him to pieces. First the arms, legs, and then the head. And then he slipped open his torso and he took a look. Peek-a-boo! I'm sorry, that was fucked up. He took the body parts and put them in trash bags, and he carried the clothes and his ID to a fire barrel, and he burned them. He dumped the body parts in a ravine later that night. He loaded the bags into his car. So what'd he do? Like, take some of the body that he didn't put in the trash bags and, like, dumped it in the ravine? I'm a little confused about that, but whatever. He put the body parts that were in the trash bags in his car. Jeff was swerving on the wrong side of the road, and a cop pulled him over. And then he even called for backup. Dahmer, he was such a good drunk that he aced the sobriety test, and he was free to go. One of the officers got a whiff of the smell and asked, "What was in that bag?" He turned on the flashlight and he looked at the bag. Dahmer said, "It's trash." He explained that his parents were going through a nasty divorce, and the screaming was keeping him awake. His mom did ask him to take out the trash earlier that day, so he thought that he could use that as an excuse right now to get out of the house. The cop told him that the dump was closed at this time and that he should go back home. He wrote him a ticket and went on their way. Dahmer recalled, "That night in Ohio, that one impulsive night. Nothing's been normal since then. It taints your whole life after it happened. I thought I'd try to live as normal as possible, and I buried it. But things like this, they don't stay buried. Once it first happened, it seems like it has control over my life. There on in." So, spring of 1987, 26-year-old Dahmer was arrested for the third time in 18 months. This was for indecent exposure to 12-year-old boys that caught him jacking off by the river. Dahmer stated later, "I've been to feel lonely and empty. Ideas keep turning over and over in my mind and they won't go away. Looking back on my life, I made others suffer just as much as I have suffered. I had strange thoughts I wish I could just get rid of." Dr. Rosen prognostics he was a schizo personality disorder, but may show paranoia tendencies. That's what he diagnosed with Dahmer. "He is definitely spooky," he said. So September of 1978, Lionel came back to check on the family. The past several months he's been away from the home at a motel that's 10 miles away from the house. Well, when he walked in, the house was covered with beer cans and liquor bottles, no food in the fridge. When he asked his son where his mom and brother went, he shrugged and said, "They moved out." So he moved back in immediately, and he tried to help Jeff get his act together. Lionel enrolled Jeff into Ohio State University. He moved in, and he started doing classes in the fall of 1978. He majored in business, but he was too drunk to get up in the morning to go to class. So when he was alone, he would actually sit there and weep, and he thought about the kill that he did, which was Stephen Hicks. Jeff dropped out during the holiday, and so his dad decided to send him to the army instead. So he was actually sent to Fort McLennan in Alabama, that's how you say it. But in June, he was shipped out to West Germany. After basic training, he went back to drinking. In 1981, he was discharged for poor performance, 2 years after he was enlisted. So he literally could have just stuck it out for 2 more years and he would have been all right. Not really sure. That fucking sucks. He was given a one-way ticket back to the States. And when they asked him where he wanted to be dropped off at, he said Miami. Which he's never been to Florida before and he wasn't ready to face his father just yet. He thought maybe the warm weather and the sunshine would cheer him up. He ended up getting a job down there and a place to stay in a motel. And when he was working, he was enjoying the sun. When he wasn't at work, I meant. Due to his obsessive drinking, he lost his job, and he had to pack up his belongings since he couldn't afford the motel anymore. He decided to sleep on the beach, and the shore was very cold. He realized he can not run away from his problems forever, so he gave in and gave his father a call. So in September of 1981, he moved back in with his dad. Just 2 weeks after he got back, he got arrested for drinking vodka from an open bottle at a bar, and he refused to leave. Even after police were called. He was let off with a citation, but his dad was pissed. Jeffrey said that his grandmother was a sweet and was a nice old lady, and so his dad wanted him to go live with her instead. But when directly asked, "Do you love her?" he said, "Yep." She lived in that house a long time. So in December 1981, he moved back to Milwaukee and he lived with his grandma. And he started reading the Bible. He tried to banish those sinful desires like the homosexuality and the murders. 2 years, he was successful. He was a devout Christian. And, you know, the memory of Stephen Hicks faded in the back of his mind. So in 1984, he was reading a book at a public library when a gentleman slid a piece of paper by him and continued to walk. On the note, it said, "Meet me in the second story bathroom. I'll give you a blowjob." He was surprised, but it quickly turned to panic. One thing leads to another. Hook up in the bathroom, the gay sex, the thoughts come running back, and then the dismemberment, and then the bones. He thought to himself, "Not today." It did not reawaken the murders, but it did reawaken his sexual desires, though. He went to Southridge Mall one day, and he came across a mannequin, and he liked it. He hid inside of the store until they locked it up, and he undressed the mannequin, and he put it in the sleeping bag cover, and then he carried it right out of the store. That's what I don't understand. How the fuck did he get out of the store with that? If they locked it up, how did he get out? That's my thing. Wouldn't he be locked in the store all night long? That makes no sense. And then he took it in a taxi back to his grandma's house. So eventually his grandmother found the mannequin in the closet and told his dad. And his dad told him that he needed to get rid of the fucking mannequin. And he asked him about it as well. And he was like, "I did it for a prank." Well, he told him to return the mannequin to the store. So he tried to dig up a person at a cemetery, but the ground was too hard. And he gave up and he never tried again. Well, maybe you should have asked your boy Ed Gein. He is a professional at doing that, my friend. So in 1985, Milwaukee had 123 gay bars and counting. Jeffrey wasn't down to received, but he wanted to take control. You just lay there and be quiet. So in June of 1986, he found a solution. He took sleeping pills, mixed them with the bottle of liqueur, and then he'd take it to the bathhouse. Partner up, fill up a drink, head to the room. Once unconscious, he would lay next to them and masturbate. Sometimes he would fall asleep next to them with his head on their chest and listen to their heart. Some people complained to the managers, others just stayed quiet. The gay community tried to stay off the police radar so they wouldn't, like, snitch or do anything that would bring light to them because they were already getting a lot of hate back then. So they wouldn't say anything. Plus, I don't think the police would believe them at all, personally. So Dahmer said that he drugged 10 men in the bathhouse within a year. Management didn't say a word. But in 1987, a young man overdosed on the pills and was hospitalized. Dahmer was banished. Nobody called the police, though. Even when word got out that Dahmer was drugging people, he still was welcome to the gay bars. His favorite place was 219. Oh, God. My friends went to a bar last night called 519. Get the hell out of there.
No, Jeff just sat on the stool watching everyone until closing time. He wouldn't do anything or make a move until the bar closed. It didn't take much effort to get someone to come home with them. He was probably, like, examining and watching everybody to see who his victims could be. And then he'd pick out, like, the most drunk person and be like, hey, come home with me. And they'd be like, okay, because they're not thinking in their right mind. So I see what he's doing. He would rent a cheap hotel room in the Ambassador Hotel. Same routine. He'd run into some guys. He would drug them at the bar. And then he would coerce them. Or cordialize them, my bad. Dahmer was sent to the University of Wisconsin Clinical Department. Kathy Bowes. Jeff could be a psychopath, deviant, or sociopath. She noted, without some type of intervention which is supported, he could gravitate to more substance abuse, my bad, with increase of, what is that thing called? What is that called? Masochism? Satanism? Or satanic? Sadistic? Masochism, sadistic tendencies, and behaviors. Yeah, I could never get that word right. I always stutter. He was attending his court-ordered therapy. He was still luring men back to his hotel room and drugging them while all this was going on. So November 20th, 1987, his next victim was 25-year-old Stephen Tuomi. He was a restaurant cook that was from a small town in Michigan. He took Stephen back to the hotel, and the next day he woke up with a terrible hangover and bruises all over his arms. Stephen was laying under him, and his head was dangling off the edge of the bed, blood dripping from his mouth. His chest was beaten so badly that it was completely caved in. Damn! He couldn't remember a thing that happened. Even years later, I felt completely shocked. It was like shock mixed with horror. I couldn't believe it happened again. After all these years, I did nothing like this. It's been more than 9 years since the murder of Stephen Hicks. He didn't hurt anyone. He had violent fantasies, but he didn't really act on them, besides drugging the men. I don't know why I'm still talking like Dahmer, even though this isn't him speaking. I mean, he didn't do anything. Like, he's just been drugging men, that's about it. He hasn't been, like, killing anybody or anything, so he was, like, really shocked to see, right? There's some theories. There's two theories, but I'm gonna add my theory in there as well. So, the first one is that he probably went into a dissociative amnesia state. Another one is, he probably knows what he did, but he's pretending and he blacks it out. Or, his memory wanted him to block it out because he was already going through all the bullshit trauma and the shit that he had with the whole Stephen Hicks kill. You know, it bothered him so badly, maybe his mind blocked it out. Or, in my theory, he was just so fucking drunk and he blacked out, that's why he couldn't really remember. I'm not sure. We're really not sure at all. So, what he did was he paced around the room for 5 hours, smoking cigarettes until he came up with a solution. When he left, he put the do not disturb thing on the handle of the door, hoping that the maids wouldn't go in there. So he went and bought a suitcase and brought it back. He stuffed Steven's body in the suitcase and carried it outside to the curb. He called a cab to take him back to his grandma's house, and the driver helped him put the case into the trunk, and then he said, "What do you have in there, a body?" Dahmer replied, "Yes. Yes, I do." I wonder, what did the cab driver think once Dahmer got caught? Because it made, like, nationwide news. So I wonder how he was feeling when he found out. Because he nailed it right on the head. And he even admitted to him, yeah, there's a body in there. But, no, it wasn't a joke. Man, I wonder what he was thinking. So when he got home to his grandma's, his grandma was already in the bed, so he took the suitcase down to the fruit cellar, and then he went to bed. This was Saturday, November 21st, and the family was coming over for Thanksgiving, so he had to act fast. So while they were having dinner, Stephen was downstairs decomposing in the cellar. So Saturday came, the next one, and everyone was gone, so he had to dismember a week-old corpse. That had to be disgusting. He removed the parts, he took the bones, wrapped them in the sheets, and he smashed them with the hammer. He wanted to keep the head. The chicken bone method his father shown him, he tried to use it on Stephen, but the bleach made the head too brittle, so he had to toss it away. Monday morning, he left the remains on the curb, and the trash truck came and picked it up and took it away.
Dahmer was never charged for the kill due to no body. Dahmer once said, "If a person doesn't believe that there is a God to be accountable for, then what is the point to try and modify your behavior? Keeping it within accessible ranges. The thoughts are very powerful, very destructive, and they do not leave. After the fear and terror, I took a month or two and I started all over again." End quote. From there was a craving of hunger and compulsion. So January 16th, 1988, he met James Doxator, I don't know how to say his name, outside of 219, which is the club. 6 foot, with a mustache. He looked like he was a lot older, but he was only 14. So Dahmer offered the boy $50 to spend the night with him, and he accepted. They went back to his grandmother's house to chill until 4 a.m. He said that he had to leave, so Dahmer spiked his drink, he fell asleep in his arms, and he strangled him to death. He hid the body in the cellar, and then went upstairs later that morning and ate breakfast with his grandma. When he had the chance, he would go downstairs and lay next to Jamie. Is his name James or Jamie? I don't fucking know. 4 to 5 days, his grandma noticed the smell. It was time for disposal. He cut off the flesh, smashed the bones, hosed the blood down the drain. And the next day, he showed up to another court-ordered therapy session with Dr. Rosen. He tried the same method with Bobby Dwayne Simpson, where he met him at a bar called Phoenix. The drug wore off a little bit earlier than expected. He woke up, and he just let him go. Bobby went back to the Phoenix to re-encounter the story. A man at the bar turned around and said to him, "He drugged you too?" So March 24th, 22-year-old Richard Guerrero, he was Dahmer's fourth victim. And then you had 25-year-old Ronald Flowers Jr., who was also his next victim right after. Jeff actually invited Ronald to come back to his grandma's house, but once they entered the home, he heard a voice say, "Is that you, Jeff?" She was awake and can hear two sets of footsteps downstairs. "Yes, Grandma, I'm just going to make myself a cup of coffee." She went back to bed. He drugged the coffee and gave it to Ronald, and the next day, before the drugs wore off, he actually helped Donald to the bus stop because he was like, killing him right now, or killing him at all, would be a bad idea. So 2 days later, the dude actually woke up in the hospital, not understanding how he'd gotten there. By the time he was found, there were no drugs left in his system, no sign of sexual assault. He told the police the last thing he remembered was going home with Jeff. So April 5th, the police came to interview him, and he denied that he had anything to do with the situation, or he'd done anything wrong at all. Ronald had too much to drink, he helped him to the bus stop, and that's it. They had no evidence, so they let him go. September 13th, 1988. Some saxophone. He was walking home from school when Dahmer approached him, looking for a model to pose for photos. $50. So he asked him, clothes or no clothes? Dahmer said he didn't care. Dahmer seemed friendly enough, so he agreed. Now living in his own apartment, he brought the boy over, took a few photos. He gave him some coffee, but the drugs kicked in, and he tried to take the boy's clothes off before the drugs actually were fully effective, you know what I'm saying? So the boy actually understood what was going on, so he bolted for the door, and he ran all the way back to his house before passing out, and his parents called the police. They went to Dahmer's apartment and found the photos in the sleeping pill bottle. He was arrested for sexual degree, sexual assault. He only spent 6 days in jail before his dad bailed him out. One of the therapists that evaluated him said that he was a dangerous person. So March 25th, 1989, he met Anthony Lee Sears, who was 24 at the time and was at the bar. He went back to his grandma's house and he spent the night together, and then he strangled him to death after he drugged him. He kept the head and the genitals, and he called a taxidermist and asked them how to preserve the flesh. They actually told him, and so he went down to the Ace Hardware store, bought a plastic big bucket with a few bottles of cleaning acetone. After a week, the parts were a little dry, but lifelike. He placed them into a wooden box in the closet, and he just kept it there for safekeeping. So Lionel came by to pick up Jeff for his sentencing and noticed the box sitting in the closet, so he asked him what was inside. He said it was nothing, and that it wasn't his business. He was a grown man that just turned 29 2 days ago. Lionel wasn't buying it. He asked Jeff to open the box. He told his dad that there was porno magazines in the box, but he didn't want to show him now because it might upset Grandma. It worked. The grandma's downstairs, so how the fuck would it upset her if you closed the door behind you and then you ask your son, hey, show me. You know what I'm saying? I don't really see how that's an issue, but whatever. Jeff took the head and genitals out of the box and then put them in a small cosmetic metal case. So when his dad looked in the box, pornographic magazines were inside, but they were legal. So Jeff, he took the cosmetic box and he hid it in his locker at his job. So May 23rd, he was sentenced to 1 year in prison with work release. He wrote a letter to the judge asking for leniency. Sir, I've always believed that a man willing to resume responsibility for his mistakes, that makes him in life. What I did was deplorable. The world has enough misery without me adding more to it. And Lionel, his father, actually wrote a letter to the court urging to send Jeff back to therapy. He wrote, I sincerely hope that you might intervene in some way to help my son, whom I love very much, whom I want a better life. This may be our last chance. Some Sox family wrote a letter not letting him off so easily. They believed that he was a danger to society and that he should be watched wherever he went. He was released 2 months early, a March of 1990. So what he was charged with was a Class C felony, and with that punishment, it could go up to 40 years. But he only served 10 months of work release before he was released as well. Damn, the only explanation is that Dahmer was white and the family were immigrants. And Milwaukee at the time was one of the most segregated cities in the United States. Milwaukee's police department was 80% white, and the county prison was 80% not white. That's what happens when you don't have to be accountable for anyone, Dahmer said. You think you can hide your activities, and you never have to account for them. It can lead to anything, then what you did. May of 1991, 25-year-old Dean Vaughn was found strangled to death in his home at Milwaukee's Oxford Apartments. The building was locked down, so everyone that was living there was a suspect, including Dahmer. He was panicking when he saw an officer at his door. He had flesh bathing in salt water, and he had skull heads in his closet and body parts in his fridge. He thought that he was going to get arrested, and he asked him about Dean Vaughn. Jeff had nothing to do with that murder, actually, so honestly, he gave him a real statement, an alibi, and the cop was on his way. So Dahmer's PO had to make a visit every 30 days, at least once. She never did. She said that Dahmer was a low-risk sex offender, and he wasn't violent, so she waived the home visits, and the supervisor accepted it. If she would have went and visited, she would have seen it. So in May of 1990, 2 months after he was released, he met Raymond Smith outside of 219. He offered him $50 to come home with them. In 30 minutes, he was drugged and he strangled him to death. He took photos of the bodies in different positions. So he's starting to evolve a little bit. He's starting to take photos of the dead bodies now, something he wasn't doing before. So he placed the skulls on a mantle. If I couldn't keep them whole, at least I could keep their skeletons. He had put paint on them to make them look fake. If anyone asked, he would say they're just props. He brought a 80-pound drum, and he boiled the flesh inside of it. Once it was liquefied, he would pour it down the toilet. Who the hell does this guy think he is? John George Hague, whatever his name was? That's what he's giving me vibes of. 1 week later, he was killing. Late May, he bought a victim home, mixed the sleeping pills in the drink, and accidentally took it himself. He woke up missing $300 and a watch. They never said who this individual was, but consider yourself lucky. He tried again. He lured Eddie Smith, pretending to be a movie producer. None of the photos turned out well, dead or alive. He tried to heat up the skull in the oven, and it didn't work, and it exploded. He said this was the only murder that he felt bad because it was just a waste. You know, the skull blew up in a daggone microwave and he couldn't keep any parts of him, so he was like, damn, I pretty much wasted his time. I feel bad. So,
July Smith came Louis Pepe. I don't know who Louis Pepe is or how to say it. So he took photos, he had sex, and he fell asleep with Dahmer. But Dahmer was waiting for Pepe to say that he was going home. That moment never came. He was the first person to actually stay until morning, and he promised Dahmer that he would see him again. He was surprised, and he let him leave. The next night they met up again, and he went back to Dahmer's apartment. You fucked up, dude. You could have saved your life, my guy. You could have saved your own life. Damn. Dahmer was out of sleeping pills, and he snuck up behind him with the rubber mallet, and he hit him over the head. He was obviously a good match for Dahmer. He was obviously mad about that, Dahmer said. They were evenly matched, so there was no clear winner. That's what I was trying to say. They were both worn out after a few minutes, and Dahmer gave him a shitty excuse of why he did it. He accepted the apology. They continued to talk the rest of the night, and then Dahmer couldn't do any harm to him. So at 7 a.m., he promised that he wouldn't tell anyone, and Jeff walked him to the bus stop. He broke that promise and went to the police station. The story was so bizarre that they didn't believe him. So Dahmer, he was so, like, rattled about that, so he took 2 months off. Then he met up with Ernest Miller. He was 23, and he became the third skull on his mantle. He kept a few limbs and organs for other purposes. He took the bicep and he fried it in a pan with Crispo. Dahmer didn't eat his victims as disrespect. He did it as honoring them. He felt more connected to them. So I think this is the first time that he ate one of his victims. Or this is the first time we actually know he ate a victim. You know, documented, I guess. So September 24th, he met David Thomas. He asked him to come back and take photos. And when he drugged him, he realized that he wasn't his type. But Thomas would wake up and be pissed off at him, so he killed him anyways. February 18th, 1991, 19-year-old Curtis Stratter, he met the same fate. His hands, skull, feet, all kept as souvenirs. April 7th, he met Earl Lindsay, and he met Dahmer outside of a local gay bookstore. I didn't know there was local gay bookstores, but okay. After he strangled him, he tried to use his skin to preserve it in salt water, but it failed. So, May 34th, he met Tony Hughes outside of 219. He was death. I feel bad for this guy, I really do. I feel bad for all of them, but I really feel bad for this guy. The friends actually drove them home that night, and Tony and Dahmer wrote letters back and forth to each other in the backseat of the car. Well, Tony's friends dropped off Tony and Dahmer at Jeff's apartment, and they never saw Tony again. He said he based his victims off of opportunity and attraction, not race. He lived in an area that was mostly black, and he denied any racial motivation, but some people say that they heard him make racist comments before, but we're not 100% sure if that's true or not. Some people say, no, the property manager confronted Dahmer about the smell quite a few times. First time he said it was the freezer that broke and it spoiled the meat. The next excuse was his fish tank malfunctioned and all the fish died in it. He even showed him the barrel that was in the closet, and he said that he had to get rid of it. How the fuck do you, like, look at that and be like, yeah, this guy's got a barrel in the closet. That's not really a problem at all. That was so dumb. He literally could have killed the property manager and probably gotten away with it, honestly. Maybe. Unless that the property manager told everybody where he was at. He had to leave Tony outside because he had to find time to get around to him, and more complaints happened. So Tony was laying dead on the bed, and Dahmer really didn't have time to deal with him, so the smell was starting to get to all the people in the building, and they started complaining about it. So Dahmer was actually becoming more and more reckless and disorganized. Sunday, May 27th, 1991, outside the Grand Avenue Mall, he met Conorak Centiphone, or however you say his last name. He offered him $50 to pose for photos. He didn't know about the brother situation. Dahmer didn't know who he was, and he said, if I knew who I was dealing with, I sure the hell wouldn't offer him to come back. Tony was still rotten in the bedroom. So Conorak fell unconscious before he knew anything was wrong. He took a power drill and martyred him. No, I don't know how to say that. Dahmer drilled a small hole in the top of his head and aimed for the frontal lobe. And he filled the hole with Monorac acid. See, the frontal lobe controls a lot of things like speech, function of your body, logical thinking, stuff like that, right? So, 1:30 in the morning, Dahmer left to go get some beer.
Well, Conorak woke up and he managed to be able to move, and he walked out of the apartment and walked down the street. Most people passing by thought he was just drunk because, you know, he was butt naked, walking funny and stuff. So three women noticed something was wrong, and so they confronted him, and then he would speak, but he couldn't really say shit, you know what I'm saying? So they immediately were like, yo, something's not right. And so Dahmer came around the corner and saw them. He hurried up and threw his arm around him and pretended that he was his drunk friend. He promised the women that he'd take care of him, but they weren't buying it. So Conorak actually tried to fall back, but he was able to say one word, and that was no. So Jeff put him in a headlock and dragged him down the street as the women yelled at him. A crowd formed to see what was going on, and then a police car arrived. Two white cops, three black women, and a Hispanic boy. This is about to get ugly. Dahmer explained that this was his boyfriend and that he was just drunk. He didn't have any identification for his boyfriend, but he gave his own. The women were yelling that this was a child, not an adult. One of the officers told them to shut the hell up and stop yelling at me. Let me do my job. His age was anywhere from 13 to 20 by his looks. Dahmer says Asian people look a lot younger when they're not, and the officers probably agreed with that. He invited the officers back to his apartment, and he shared the photos of when Conorak was awake and functioning. So Conorak was just sitting on the couch, and he didn't even try to fight back or do anything. He just sat there. The cops looked at the photos and thought this was just a domestic dispute, and due to their history with the LGBT community, it's best that they stay out of it. One of the officers noticed a strange smell coming from the bedroom. He poked his head into the bedroom and didn't even turn on the light. Tony Hughes was laying on the bed, decomposing. So, pulled his head back out. He told Dahmer to take care of the boy, and they left. How fucking stupid are you? Dumbass. Oh my god, these people really fucking suck. Within an hour, he was dead. If they would have done a background check, they would have known that Dahmer was on probation for Conorak's brother. The PO sent Dahmer to a psychiatric evaluation, and a doctor said that he had no issues, and he wasn't a danger to himself or others. So on June 30th, he met Matt Turner after a gay pride parade. So he kept the organs, the head, and he put it in the refrigerator. So then he met Jeremiah Weinberger. That was his next victim. So he drilled a hole in his head, and he put hot water in it, and Jeremiah lived for 2 days, and then he died, and then, you know, Dahmer cut off his head and put it in the refrigerator. His body, he put it in a bleach solution in a bathtub. So July 15th, his next victim was Oliver Lacey. Weinberger's body was still in the bathtub decomposing, and Dahmer put fucking Lacey's body on top of that. Yeah, it was weird. And he didn't have time to dispose of it. So he called into work and he tried to get a personal day, but due to him taking too many personal days already, his boss got fed up and he fired him. So July 16th, he called his PO to apologize for missing the appointment on July 10th. He told the officer he recently lost his job. He was thinking about committing suicide as well. The PO sent him to another appointment that same day. They gave him anxiety medicine and that's it. On his way home, he invited a man home, but he turned him down. I wonder who that man was. On July 19th, he picked up a 25-year-old by the name of Joseph Bradoff at a bus stop. His other two victims were laying on top of each other in the bathtub, and Jeff left Joseph's body on the bed. I wonder what he did with Tony. Like, was Tony still laying on the bed? What the fuck happened? Tony! So, July 21st, the corpses were covered in maggots. Oh, man, that's disgusting. So, July 22nd, he woke up late one day, and he hadn't had a shower in a while because the bodies were piled up in the bathtub. He went to go grab a beer, and the property manager crossed paths with him in the hallway and told him if that smell don't end immediately, he will be evicted. It didn't matter to Dahmer anyways. He lost his job, and he wouldn't be able to make rent anyways. After a few beers, he wandered the city to pick up another victim. If he doesn't have money for rent, then how does he have money for beer? Well, because beer's cheaper than rent. He tried everything from the mall, the public restrooms, and more, but he had no luck. No one on a Monday wanted to follow a smelly drunk man home. He gave up and he sat down at the mall food court with a beer and a slice of pizza. At 5 p.m., he noticed three men hanging around the entrance. One of the men he recognized. It was Tracy Edwards.
They met at a bus stop before, and they smoked a cigarette and had small talk, and then they went their separate ways. He saw him once again, but this was the third time he saw him. He told Tracy and his friends that he was bored and that he would give them each $100 if they come back to his place. One asked if sex was going to be involved, and he said that wouldn't be necessary. Tracy took him up on his offer. How do y'all not know that this man's drunk and smelly and all this other shit? Like, y'all are fucking weird. The moment he got to Dahmer's apartment, he realized that he fucked up. There were multiple locks outside and inside the door, and the place looked decent but had a bad smell. Also a weird vibe. He looked around the house, and Exorcist 3 was playing on the TV. In the kitchen were three to four big boxes of Merillac acid. Tracy got closer to the fish tank to take a look, and Jeff handcuffed him on his left wrist. Tracy asked him what was happening, and he took them to the bedroom, and he said, if you do what I say, I won't hurt you. All he wanted to do was handcuff them to the bed and take photos of him. So Tracy listened to him, and he removed his shirt, and they sat on the bed, and they watched the movie. And Dahmer lowered his head to Tracy's chest and listened to his heart. Dahmer was losing it. He was barely even drugging Tracy at all, and he didn't even have the handcuffs on that good. So he left his victims alone while he went into the fridge and grabbed a beer. Tracy made a dash for the door. It was 11:30 at night, and two officers were down the street making their rounds when they saw Tracy running with the handcuff on his wrist. He asked them if he can remove the handcuff, and he didn't say anything else. The goal was just to take the handcuff off and get the hell out of there. They couldn't get it off, so Tracy agreed to go back with them to Dahmer's apartment. So Jeff opened the door, and he realized it was over. And so Jeff later said, "A power higher than me was fed up with my deeds and decided it was time for me to be stopped." So he stepped aside, and he invited the officers in. When Mueller stepped into the bedroom, he noticed a knife under the bed. He saw a drawer of Polaroids of naked men. Some of the photos were just heads and limbs, all taken in that room that Miller was standing in. He called his partner over and showed him the pictures. Dahmer actually remained calm until he heard one of them say, "Cuff him." So he fought against the arrest, but they got him. One of them kept him pinned down while the other searched the apartment. Opened in the fridge, and he saw a cardboard box on the bottom shelf. He saw the head looking back at him. Dahmer said from the floor, "For what I did, I should be dead." So he was arrested July 22, 1991. He was only 31 at the time. The police didn't even know they had a serial killer on their hands until they walked into Dahmer's apartment. The media was outside the apartment complex, filming everything. Decapitated heads and the freezer. That was what one article said. And a psychotic mass murder neighbor that no one expected to be a killer was another. The question of the year is, who is Jeffrey Dahmer? So 450 reporters came to report the case. Man or monster? He was being compared to Silence of the Lamb, which was just released 6 months earlier. They went to Ohio to interview everyone and everyone that knew Dahmer. A prom date even said that he didn't even kiss me goodnight. I mean, I wouldn't want you to... God. Back to earlier, he was too busy at McDonald's getting a burger. Cough, cough. The family of Conorite was shocked to find out that their son's remains were in Dahmer's apartment. Their son was killed by a guy who sexually assaulted their older son, and the police gave the boy right back to him after he escaped. Due to the public being so pissed off about the situation, the officers were fired. They were later reinstated. So Conorite's family actually sued Milwaukee for blatant misconduct, and they won $850,000 in a settlement. The other families just wanted closure and justice. Jeff gave the longest confession in American history, from 1:30 a.m. to 7:15 a.m. He had 5 cups of coffee, 2 cans of Coke, and he confessed to 15 murders, even though they only charged him for 10. He asked the detectives to sit down with him and actually give him like some coffee and cigarettes and stuff so he could sit there and talk with them. The next 2 weeks was Jeff's therapy session inside that interrogation room. He confessed to 2 more murders that he forgot to talk about the first time he went into the interview room. He talked about his childhood and even knew his crimes were wrong. He used alcohol as an escape.
He even said that he got blacked out drunk one time, woke up hogtied in some man's house with a candlestick in his ass. He said that he was sorry and that he would hope that he can change in the future. He said that he should have got a college degree in real estate and got himself an aquarium. That's what he should have done. So Dahmer had a court case January of 1992, and he wore a white button-up shirt, khakis, nice shoes, and a suit jacket, looking more like a high school teacher. His attorney wanted him to go for the insanity plea deal, so a bunch of psychiatrists analyzed Dahmer to see if he would fit the stand trial. The first question was wrote out because he knew from right and wrong. That was the first question. The second question everyone is confused about, was he able to control himself? I personally say no. During the 9 years, at that one point, yes, he was able to control himself, but not for long. Without proper treatment, he wasn't able to control any of those feelings he had forever. One doctor said that his necrophilia was a cancer of the mind. He didn't choose to have the thoughts, nor be able to stop them. One doctor said that he had long-term mental illnesses that were never treated. Having thoughts, like using a power drill to turn someone into a zombie? Yeah, something's not right. With Dahmer's illnesses, he needed to be treated at all times, and he couldn't do it alone. Psychiatrist Deeds, he was on the other side of the spectrum, saying that people like Dahmer never act out on their fantasies or their crimes, so he doesn't feel bad for him. And the first two kills are perfectly planned, so for someone with impulse issues, they wouldn't be able to do that. Which I disagree. I don't think that Dahmer even planned out his first kill exactly. Like, he planned the hiker one, but he didn't, like, plan Stephen Hicks. You know what I'm saying? He might have planned the boy who did not go running by him with the baseball bat in the bushes. Yes, that one was planned, but not Stephen Hicks or Stephen Tuomi's. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know where he's coming from that. It sounds logical, but it may not be medically correct. Psychologists and psychiatrists sometimes not understanding necrophilia and thinking that this person is a psychopath or a sociopath, a deviant. They just tried many times to prevent him from killing, even though it didn't work. So Dahmer tried to, like, force himself to stop many times, but it didn't work at all. Nobody at the trial even offered him a suggestion, but Dahmer understood what he was doing. If he really wanted to stop, or he really wanted to help, he would have cooperated during his therapy sessions or turning himself into the police. Jeff said that he is the only one to blame for his actions. So on February 15th, 1992, he was charged with 15 murders. So he was going to get charged for Stephen Hicks, and later on, the second, Stephen Tuomi, he was never charged with his murder because they never found a body. Dahmer accepted his 15 life sentence calmly. For a year, he stayed in solitary confinement out of the fear of other inmates, but on November of 1994, Christopher Scarver beat him to death with a metal bar. Dahmer died at the age of 34. 10 books, 4 films, 6 documentaries, a comic book, and more were all made after Jeffrey Dahmer. Jeffrey was famous. Chris actually made headlines in 2015 due to Dahmer's murder when he explained it a little bit more. So that's pretty much the end of Jeffrey Dahmer's story. There's actually a lot more, but, you know, I don't want to get to the point where I'm, like, making a 10-hour podcast. So here's some facts about everything. First off, Jeffrey's dad made a book from his point of view. Christopher Scarver actually made a book as well. I want to read them and see what they're really about. And Chris is actually really close to his son as well. Didn't know about that. And Chris also suffered from, like, schizophrenia. And, you know, he killed Dahmer because what supposedly happened is Dahmer got tired of being in isolation, wanted to be back in general population. Scarver said that Dahmer would actually, like, take his food and make it look like it was his victim's. And he would, like, smother it with fucking ketchup. And supposedly he went up to Dahmer in the bathroom because they were working together. I don't know if it was like a bathroom, a fucking area for weightlifting. I don't know exactly where it is, but it was Dahmer, some other dude, and Chris. So Chris said he felt something touch his butt, and one of the guys took a broom and, like, poked him in the ass with it. And when he turned around, Dahmer and the other dude were laughing. Well, the other dude killed his wife. So Chris came up there
And I think he might have killed Dahmer first from behind and then went and killed Chris, or he killed Chris first and then he came over and killed Dahmer. Not sure, but he killed both of the guys. And I think that it was planned from the get-go. I don't think that the officers were, like, oblivious because they let them by themselves. You know what I'm saying? They let them alone. So I'm like, yeah, that was definitely fucking planned, honestly. So, you know, Dahmer didn't even like being gay. He told them in the interview, 12 or 13 is when he discovered that he was gay. He once made out with another boy in the neighborhood in a treehouse, but it didn't get past kissing, and they weren't romantic at all. A newspaper called Dahmer the Angel of Death. An investigator tried to look through both sides of the family to see what was wrong with Jeff, but came up with nothing. All he could find was alcohol. All he could find was alcoholism, nothing else. His childhood friend Tyson said that he lived in front of Jeff, so they'd hang out a lot, but it was just them, no one else. Jeff found out he was gay at 13, and when he was 18, that's when he felt that he wanted to have sex with a person that wouldn't fight back or have any control. Knocking out the jogger that never came by was his first dark fantasy, which I wonder, like, what did that jogger think? Like, oh shit, I got lucky. This guy was planning to knock me out the whole time, and he probably would have killed me if I would have went running that day. You know what I'm saying? Because there's no way that he didn't know now that all these documentaries and stuff come out. He knows that it was him. Like, oh, I'm the jogger they're talking about, you know? So Jeff Flennings actually reported the news back to the news anchors on July 23rd at 6 a.m. when all the fucking media was standing outside of the Oxford's apartments, right? So the people that were sitting at the table, which was Mike Miller and Juliet Peters, that's who Jeff Flennings was talking to, they were so stunned they didn't even ask Jeff Flennings any questions. They just stared at him. Jeff was expecting a question, so later on, when he saw them, he asked them, "Why didn't you ask me a question?" And their response was, they couldn't think of a question. So when his mom left, he was more depressed and lonely. Talk about Dahmer. His muscular physiques is what attract Jeff. Like, he liked guys that were in shape, muscular-looking dudes, whatever. Stephen Hicks wanted to leave, and it made Dahmer want to control him, and he lost all feelings. I think what really fucked it up is when Stephen said he had a girlfriend, and Dahmer didn't want him to leave, and, you know, it's just a bunch of shit. Gay or not, he was going to have him. He was not sure why he hit him. He just wanted him to stay longer. I think Dahmer just wanted somebody to love him and be there for him, I guess. But he put him in this crawl space and he checked on him once. So he had morbid curiosity of what it was like to see a dead person. Curiosity with a lot of fear. He cut him up, legs, arms, then head, and he masturbated on the body. We all know that. He kept him in the house with him for 6 hours before, you know, he took him to the crawl space. Fred Berlin, which was a forensic psychologist, the defense, he diagnosed of Jeff was necrophilia. He put Hicks in a 2-foot drainage pipe and tossed a knife and other things like belonging to Hicks into the water of the river. Supposedly, even though he burned, like, you know, his clothing and ID. While his dad lived at a hotel, he spoke to his dad once or twice a week. So he did speak to his dad. I was like, dude, why do you live 10 minutes down the road but you don't speak to your fucking son? Like, that's pretty fucked up. Like, could have done better, but it says he did speak to him once or twice a week. He went to Ohio State but failed due to drinking, and then he went into the Army. Supposedly, he learned some of that, like, decomposing stuff, not only from his dad, but in the Army as well. That's what it said in the Netflix series, but I don't really know for sure. Supposedly, he was drugging guys in the Army as well. I'm not really sure, you know. He learned to find organs in the military. That's what it is. So his drinking had him discharged. When he came back to the house 3 years later, the bags that still had Stephen Hicks' body parts, they were still there. The ones that he was supposed to take off to the dump, he put them in a drain pipe instead, and 3 years later, they were still there. So that's crazy. He decided to go in the woods and spread the body parts throughout the woods. Well, until Dahmer's trail, they had no idea what happened to their son until they found out 13 years later. So Stephen Hicks' family did not even know what happened to him until Dahmer's trial 13 years later. Jeff felt a lot of guilt whether or not to confess. So he did feel bad for Stephen's murder, but he never had the courage to go up to the police and say anything. He said it was terribly wrong and that he never wanted to have anything like that ever happen again. And the more they gave him coffee and cigarettes, the more he was willing to talk in the interrogation room. Dahmer often went to church. The mannequin he stole, his grandma found it and gave some story about blah, 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 blah. Yeah, we already know that. So, supposedly, he took the mannequin to the basement and he smashed it to pieces. I don't know if he returned it to the store or he smashed it to pieces. I don't know. In the library, a faceless dude slid Dahmer a note saying that he'd give him a blowjob. I wonder who that guy is, and did he ever see that guy? And you consider yourself lucky, dude, because he could have fucking murdered you, and you would have been another victim of his. So, Dahmer was a big fan of the Emperor from Star Wars, so he went out and bought some contacts and put them in before going out on the prowl. Wow. He said people would go to these horror movies to see up close and what the movie has to offer. The only difference is, I did it for real. What a flex. It sounds like a flex right there. After the ambassador is when he had let go of the control, which was the hotel where he beat Stephen Wilmy to death, which we still don't know why that happened, but okay. So, when Jeff put a handcuff on Tracy, they sat and watched a movie. Jeff was holding breads, walking back and forth, speaking in tongues. So Jeff actually knew how to speak in tongues? What? Tracy said that he had to use the bathroom and smacked the side of Jeff's arms and took off running. What? That's what Jeff said, that he took off running. So were you at the fucking fridge getting a beer when Tracy ran out the door, or was he sitting next to you and he smacked your arms away and took off running? I don't know. Supposedly, he had like 8 locks on the door, and Tracy managed to guess the right one and got out. So, the cops, they didn't have a key to take off the handcuffs, so they had to go back to Dahmer's apartment to get it off. So, Tracy told police that Jeff told him that there were heads in the refrigerator. So, they went and looked. The cops screamed when he saw the head looking back at him. It gave him nightmares so bad that he retired. His lawyer would tell him not to talk, The lawyer told him not to talk and that they were going to take a sanity deal, but Dahmer was like, nah, and he signed a waiver and he started to talk to the investigators. When it came to the bodies in his grandma's house, he kept them in the fruit cellar, and then when she wasn't home, he would have sexual fantasies with them. After he was satisfied, he'd dismember them. Yeah, in class one time, they dissected a small pig and he cut the head off and he took it home with them. He pulled off the skin and he kept the skull for a while, and Jeff said he didn't think that he knew how to love. These are just facts, so they sound like they're all over the place because they're just facts. It's not like a storyline, so. The therapist lady, you don't know how to love, is what you're saying? I don't think people who love would do these things. He's right. People who know how to love, they wouldn't be doing these kind of things to other people. Jeff Flinnings got a word from an officer that the killer was named Jeffrey Dahmer, and it wasn't public at the time. So he went to the station and typed his name, and he found that his criminal history of sexual assault. Conorak's brother went back with Dahmer, stripped down in his underwear, and Jeff took photos of him. He made coffee with Irish cream mist with mint, and he put sleeping pills in the cup and gave it to the boy. Wow. He said that he had to get going, and Jeff paid him $50, and he left. Who the fuck was this? Who was this person? He had no intentions or no knife, and so he just let him go. Who the fuck is that? The victim said he liked listening to his stomach. He placed his head on his stomach and listened to it. Oh, Conorak's brother said that. I remember that. Okay. So Dr. Norman, who was the chief psychiatrist on the case, didn't get to talk to Dahmer at first because Dahmer was pissed. And then he would even try to, like, avoid talking to him, or he would show up late to the meetings. Anything to avoid Dr. Norman, because he was pissed about getting arrested for, you know, the sexual assault case with Conorak's brother. So when the doctor tried to talk to him, he was pretty much like, I ain't talking to you. Fuck you, you know?
So Dahmer gave him a cold stare and he was angry, but he still gave up information. Dr. Norman said that he was more likely to reoffend and that he should be incarcerated. His probation officer, Donna Chester, was supposed to check on him twice a month, but she didn't. Yeah. Disorderly conduct charges he got was because he threatened to shoot a bartender. He ended up getting a citation for giving the finger to a police officer on the street. Jeffrey's neighbor said that his home was full of cops, and he asked one of them, "Is Jeff okay?" The officer replied, "That fucker is fine." That fucker's fine, yep. So, that's the end of Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm not going to go anymore because there's so many fucking stories, perspectives, whatever. I watched the show. It was pretty decent, I guess. But to me personally, I'm not a big fan of the Jeffrey Dahmer story. It just seems very boring, if you ask me. For a serial killer, he seems like really, really fucking boring, if you ask me, right? And I stuttered a lot through the story, and a lot of that shit probably didn't make sense, but it is what it is. I want to know, like, some of these people's opinions. Like, the guy that was running every day that Dahmer was about to hit with the baseball bat, like, what his thoughts were after finding out about Dahmer being a killer. I want to know, like, the classmate who said, "Oh, Dahmer was the second on my list." And I want to know who the first person on his list was and wonder if, you know, he ever became a killer or sex offender or anything like that in life. You know, that's what I want to know. Also, when I was at Magic City Ford, I was actually getting my oil change, right? And Dr. Phil actually had Jeffrey Dahmer's father on TV along with his girlfriend or wife, that lady that was in the show, whatever. And they don't refer him as Jeffrey. They call him Jeff. Which was weird because, you know, Dr. Phil called him Jeffrey and it was like, we referred to him as Jeff. And I'm like, well, okay, it's the same fucking thing, Lionel. Calm the fuck down. And he had like reddish hair and he looked like a clown. I was like, what the fuck is going on? He's also still mad that his son was murdered. Obviously, I mean, any father would feel that way about their kid. I mean, he loved his son. But here's the thing with the, oh, he didn't have any childhood trauma. When parents argue and they fight all the time and your mom's not really spending time with you, she's so depressed, she's laying in bed, you feel guilty because you think you're the reason why she's depressed, and then your parents are arguing and your dad's, you know, always out at work, you're not really having that family bond together, that can give you childhood trauma. It gave me childhood trauma, my parents arguing, fighting, and all that stuff. So I don't think that Dahmer had like a squeaky clean childhood that they try to make it out to be, even with these videos and what his parents say. I mean, even in the show, his dad was blaming his mom, and his mom was blaming him, and it was like a back and forth. It's like, you know, I don't think that at all. And Dahmer had, like, a lot of illnesses. He, like, necrophilia, schizotypoid personality disorder. He had something else. Like, he had so many disorders, and they go into reason why. I think one was, like, schizotypoid. And that was the reason why he was, like, always monotoned and disconnected and didn't really want to be around people. I mean, if y'all want to get into the psychology of it, you can. But I'm not a psychiatrist, so I wasn't going to get into it. And all these psychiatrists and psychologists are trying to figure out why Dahmer did what he did and why he was so willing to confess and, you know, all this stuff. And it seemed like, personally to me, I feel like Dahmer could have gotten help. I don't know if it would have made any differences, but I would think that Dahmer could have got some fucking help, and it would have been different. His parents failed him. That teacher that saw him on the grass failed him. His psychiatrist failed him. But if Dahmer really wanted help, you know, like they said, he could have taken those therapy sessions, you know, instead of like acting like, you know, they were just a normal day. Another thing is, how the fuck was he able to keep that damn box with the head and the genitals that, you know, his dad told him to open up that had the porn, like the pornography and shit in it? How was he able to put that in his locker? He worked at work release. Like, how did he not get caught? Because when he got locked up for 1 year, did he keep his job? How did they not notice the fucking box in the locker with the head and the genitals? You know what I'm saying? When he got locked up for the pedophilia shit, you know? How did he not? That makes no sense. Also, they had, like, this other thing in the show where, like, he gave his neighbor like some barbecue sandwich, and it was supposed to be like made from humans. And then they had this thing where like Glinda was his neighbor, but actually she wasn't his neighbor. She didn't even live in the same building. They have in the show where it's like Conorak is actually in front of the apartment, but in real life, as y'all heard me say earlier, that he was actually down the street, and he actually like tried to tell him, come on, and then Conorak was like, no. It was the only word he could say. And then he like put his ass in a headlock and was like, come on, motherfucker, come on. And, you know, I know the ladies were probably like, dude, you putting him in a fucking headlock, all this is just not cool at all. And the thing is, how stupid was that cop? Like, he literally could have just turned on the light in the bedroom and saw the dude's body laying there. I forgot his name, the deaf guy. He could have literally just turned on the fucking light and saw it. It was like Dahmer was getting more and more sloppy. You know, he like bodies in the tub. He wasn't taking a shower. He wasn't dismembering them. They were just smelling badly. Like, at least at his grandma's house, like, once she started complaining about the smell, then he would dispose of them, right? But for his own apartment, once he started getting to the end of his killing spree, it was like he just didn't give a fuck anymore. I feel like if he had his own house, he would have probably been on, keep going for a while. And if, you know, some of those guys didn't get away, like Tracy or the guy that he got in a fight with that, you know, did pretty well, that held up his own, and he promised, oh, I won't talk about, you know, you trying to hit me in the head with a fucking rubber mallet, and then he goes to the police station and they didn't believe him. I wonder how he feels now, like, oh my God, I escaped this guy. He hit me in the head with a rubber mallet, and then we got in a fist fight, and I don't know how that didn't, like, get the police called on them, you know, because my walls are thin in this fucking house. I can hear my dogs downstairs barking, my parents. I can hear the TV. How the fuck did his neighbors not hear them beating the shit out of each other? You know what I'm saying? That makes no sense to me at all. And how did the guy that was telling Dahmer, like, hey, if you don't get rid of that fucking smell, we're going to evict you. How did he not notice that this man had like 8 fucking locks on his door? Like, they said they had some on the outside of the door and the inside of his door. How do you not notice that? These people are so fucking dumb. Like, they are beyond dumb. The only smart people was Conorak's family, the parents and shit, and the brother, because he escaped Dahmer. Also, was Conorak not there when his brother and Dahmer was having their court case? Was he not there? Because, like, wouldn't you know that, hey, this dude, like, molested my brother? Let's not get near this fucking guy at all. You know, it's crazy. And what blows my mind is even when Dahmer fucking drugged these guys and he saw them in the bar and stuff, they would still, like, have casual talks with him. Like, hey, it's good to see you. Like, what? Bitch, he tried to fucking drug you and then fucking sleep with your lifeless, well, your sleepless body that could eventually one day be lifeless. What? That other guy, those 3 guys should consider themselves, no, 4 guys should consider themselves lucky. The jogger that didn't run that day, consider yourself lucky. Tracy, the last victim, consider yourself lucky. The guy that put up a good fight with the rubber mallet situation, that they didn't believe his story, consider yourself lucky. And Conorak's brother, consider yourself lucky. Because that literally could have given him more bodies. And that one guy that, you know, Dahmer, like, was coming out of his therapy session, and he asked the guy, like, hey, you want to come back? And the guy, like, said no. And it was like a Monday evening, and that's when he saw, like, Tracy and his friends and shit at the mall. Yeah, earlier that day, that guy needs to consider himself lucky as well. So, it's just mind-boggling that Dahmer could have had a higher body count if these people that got away or accepted his offer would have came back with them. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy. I mean, he could have even killed his grandma, but, I mean, that would have thrown too many red flags, and he wouldn't have got away with that. But the fact is, there was a corpse downstairs in the fruit cellar rotting while they were upstairs eating Thanksgiving dinner. That's fucked. That is so fucked. There's so many times, if his dad would have opened that box right then and there, it would have been over. If they would have looked in his locker, they would have known. It would have been over. If that cop would have turned on that light and saw that dude laying there, it would have been over. If they would have gone inside and, you know, dealt with the situation before, it would have been over. If they would have looked up his background, with the Conrack situation, it would have been over. If the judge didn't give him, like, leniency and let him out 2 months early on his sentence, probably, I don't know, that wouldn't have made no difference still. If the cops would have looked in that trash bag when he was going to the dump, it would have been over. You know, there's just so many times that it could have been over. There's people like, hey, we're warning you, this guy's fucking sick. We're, like, warning you, this guy ain't what he says he is. It could have been over. You know what I'm saying? There's just a lot of things, and there's so much about Dahmer that it just blows my mind, and I don't want to sit here for, like, 10 fucking hours. This was already a pain in the ass, and I put it off for, like, 2 weeks, and I did other stories like Bruce MacArthur and the Red Ripper, because Dahmer's story is just so fucking big. Like, the only people who knows Dahmer's whole full story is Dahmer and God, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I was just watching his interview earlier, and I think Evan Peters did a good, you know, acting job on Dahmer. And yeah, there's a lot of backlash, and they didn't even ask the families and stuff. And it's just wild, man. It's just really fucking wild. You know, I didn't want to continue to go. And oh, all my sources that I got this from is Serial Killer Podcast on Parcast, on Spotify only, and Confessions, you know, I think it's Confessions of a Serial Killer, Jeffrey Dahmer, where he sat in front of the lady and confessed about a lot of those. Those are where a lot of my facts were coming from as well. So, yeah. And the neighbor one, I saw that one on YouTube. I can't remember what page that was, but let me go ahead and look at that so I can give that person a shout out on their page, because I didn't really watch it all the way through. So, yeah, it's crazy. It's real fucking crazy. So, it was a neighbor. What was it? What was his name? That's not it. Okay. Englix. Englix. It says, Jeffrey Dahmer's neighbor recalls unknown secrets, full interview. That's the other one I was watching. So, yeah, it's really crazy. It's really crazy. And I watched Jeff's last interview, and, you know, I'm watching the interview with Stone Phillips as well. There's just so much. So I'm done with Dahmer's story. I'm done. I don't really care about Jeffrey. I just thought, you know, since the show came out, it was like, fuck it. It was a hot topic. Let me just go ahead and knock it out. And I did it on New Year's 2023. So I really wanted to get done on 2022, but it is what it is. I love all of you. Stay safe. If you see something, say something. You know, don't be like these idiots in the story. I love you all. Stay safe. And watch your back. And don't take drinks from people you don't know. Love you guys. I'm out.